This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
So if you look at the Muslim world now, the fact that there are not mass revolutions and revolts is a testimony to incredible patience on behalf of the Muslims. I mean, I really believe that. It's a testimony to the fact that because they believe in God and because they believe that in a sense, that they know in essence this is about their own states. Not their governmental states, but their spiritual states. In other words, the conditions we find in a society are reflections of the overall health of that society, which at root is a spiritual health. A society is either well spiritually or it's sick spiritually. And unfortunately, the vast majority of people are very sick. So this idea of jihad, it's a noble concept. It's the idea of fighting for what is right. It's as simple as that. And people have a right to do that. They have a right to defend their homes, to defend their religion, to defend their lands against the predations of aggressors. The Quran says, أَعِدُّوا مَسْتَطَعْتُ مِنْ قُوَّةٍ وَرِبَاطَ الْخَيْلِ. Always be in preparation. Why? Because the best way of maintaining peace is to always be prepared for war. And that is unfortunately a truth of the world that we're living in. Until human beings can sit down in civil discourse and work out their problems like human beings. As long as you have people out there that are willing to get and take what they want by hook or by crook, by force and by power, then you need to have people prepared to stand up against that. And pacifism, the pacifist in the end of the day, is somebody that becomes landless and a victim. And that's why Aboriginal peoples, traditionally, the reasons that they survived is because they lived in places nobody wanted. Now they want the forests of Brazil. And so look at all those Aboriginal people that are just get wiped out because they want their wood. But traditionally, nobody bothered them because nobody wanted to go and live in the jungles of Brazil. Nobody wanted to go live in the outback of Australia. The Aboriginals were fine. They didn't have any problem. But now they want to graze their cattle there. So suddenly you've got problems. The same with the Native Americans in this country. When they wanted to graze their cattle, they needed to wipe out the buffalo. And that's what happens to Aboriginal peoples. And that's why Islam is just telling people to be prepared to defend yourself, because that's the nature of the world you're living in. So the idea of submitting to a law, and that's why the Muslims, long before Grotius or any of these European developments of international law, which are now seen really as platitudes, I mean, I'm talking at the level of people that are running the world. You know, I read their stuff, read Foreign Affairs, and read what they say. This is not conspiracy theory. This is just what they talk about. They're very open about it. Moral high ground is for the masses. The reality of it is, it's just real politics. It's business as usual. So now, unfortunately, in the modern Muslim world, and one of the signs of the end of time, and I will say about jihad, if you look at the rules of engagement, who determines the rules of engagement? Islamic rules of engagement, in the Mukhtasar of Sidi Khalil, Haruma Nabnun Summa, it's prohibited to use poisoned arrows, which is basically biological warfare. I mean, Muslims develop rules of engagement. La tusammimu abara a'da'ikum. The Prophet ﷺ said, do not poison the wells of your enemies. This is biological warfare or chemical warfare, basically. La tu'adhibu bin nar. La yu'adhibu bin nar illa rabbun nar. Don't use fire in fighting your enemies, because only Allah punishes with fire. Nuclear holocaust. We use incendiary bombs all the time. This country, we use incendiary bombs. People are incinerated, literally. And you can see Nagasaki and Hiroshima, they have footage of the shadows of people that, just a shadow of people just blasted, annihilated. 100,000 civilians. They were civilians. There were only 10,000 Japanese soldiers in both of those cities. And they knew that. And that was actually taught to them by the British, Mad Bomber Browning or something. British war theorist who thought that the best way to subdue a people into submission was to attack their civilian population. William Tecumseh Sherman, the March to the Ocean. I mean, this is a Civil War theory. The Confederates didn't have that concept. I mean, they were deeply troubled by this idea of making civilians suffer. But the idea of Sherman was war is hell and there's no nice way to wage war. And the best way to end it is just make the civilians suffer until the infrastructure breaks down, because no state can support an army if the civilians are not behind it. I mean, that was the idea. And this is why Dresden and the bombing of the German civilians is the same thing. These things are prohibited in Islam. And that's why if you look at the rules of engagement in Islam, Muslims should not be ashamed of them. There's some things we should be proud of, that these were given to us 1400 years ago. Not killing, it's mutawatir hadith, multiply transmitted hadith of not killing women and children, is absolutely prohibited in jihad, to kill women or children. Certainly not raping or pillaging. The idea of war booty, which is permissible in Islam, but yasalunaka anil anfal. Allah says, anfal are Allah and His messengers. You can't take them. And one of the worst crimes in Islam, and one of the greatest wrong actions, is predation during war, is to actually take property from people. No, it's the imam has to collect the property and then it's distributed. So there's rules of engagement to make people civil in their behavior. Sayyidina Abu Bakr, when he sent his troops out, he said, don't poison wells, don't cut fruit trees, don't kill livestock, don't kill religious people, don't kill old people, don't kill women, don't kill children. He would actually walk out and remind them of these principles. And these were completely alien to the Jahili Arabs. I mean, these were deeply revolutionary ideas. Jihad is grossly misunderstood, and it's unfortunate a reality. And then I just want to finish this section in saying one thing. Last century, almost 200 million people were killed in war. 200 million people, the majority of whom were civilians. Unprecedented. By far more than all of the human wars prior to that, in one century, because of modern technology. Now, those people were not killed in the name of religion. They were killed in the name of communism, socialism, fascism, democracy, whatever. Everything but religion. So this idea that religion causes wars is just simply not true. Humans cause war. It's as simple as that. Humans are belligerent. And Aristophanes, the Greek playwright, indicated that it's really the men that are belligerent. And he said the only way war is going to stop is if women go on strike and stop producing sons for these old men to send out to die. There's a beautiful scene in a film that was done, I think it was like 1929 or 1930, All's Quiet on the Western Front. It's an anti-war film that was prohibited. They didn't even allow it to be shown in this country. But there's a scene where these German soldiers are all sitting around, and one of them says, it's World War I, and one of them says, how'd this war start? And the German says, well, France offended Germany. And he said, what does that mean? I'm German, they didn't offend me. And he said, no. Well, you know, the country offended our country. And he said, well, how'd they do that? And he said, well, I don't know. This is the point. It's like, who starts wars? Who starts them? The majority of wars that are started are total acts of insanity. Really stupid. They really are. And that's why if you look during the 23 years of the Prophet, less than 2,000 people were killed. So you compare 200 million people in 100 years, all totaled, I mean, it's probably less than 23 years of the major wars that caused all those deaths. And you compare that to 1,800 people on both sides killed during the lifetime of the Prophet ﷺ. And all they were doing was defending their homeland. These were individuals who knew who was aggressing them. It wasn't some state aggressing another state. It was human beings that were treating other human beings wrongly. And they knew exactly who they were. They could actually point them. They could name them. Nobody knows who's starting what. Nobody even knows the names of these people. And a lot of it is just missile contracts and armaments. And that's why Eisenhower, after serving the military-industrial complex, when he left the White House in 1960, his farewell address, he warned Americans of this very dangerous collaboration, which was new to this country, and that was of the military-industrial complex. Once you get the military and industry in this collaborative relationship, the industry produces the arms, and the military uses the arms, you're setting yourselves up for a very dangerous situation. And that's why, I mean, you just wonder about who's reaping all the benefits of all this killing going on and who supplied all the weapons. I mean, every time I see pictures of Palestinians or Jews, I see weapons manufactured in Britain and in America and in Afghanistan. Where are all those weapons coming from? They're all Kalashnikovs and M16s, Stinger missiles. Afghanis didn't make any of them. Who gave them all to them to do all that stuff? I mean, that's the real question. And the Prophet ﷺ said, "Bay'ul asliha 'inda al-fitnati mal'un." The one that sells weapons during strife, times of discord, is damned to hell. And that's why in the Maliki Madhab, it's not even a valid contract. You can't sell a weapon when there's civil discord. It's mafsukh. And I don't think anybody in this day, nobody has any moral authority to talk about the belligerence of Islam. That's my personal belief. They used to call the Cold War detente status. The idea was we had enough weapons to blow them up. They had enough weapons to blow us up. They called it MAD, M-A-D. That was an acronym in the Pentagon. Mutually Assured Destruction. Let's make sure if they push the button, that we push the button before their rockets get here. So all of them get wiped out. Again, just real stupidity here. The biological weapons, technically, I mean, these things are supposed to be banned, right? And the problem is that there's no vigilance in terms of the citizenry, because the citizenry, I mean, they're more interested in what's on television or watching the latest ball game or what the batting average of so-and-so is. This is the reality, so you get what you deserve. But I incline towards those hadiths of if it gets like that, then just the Prophet ﷺ said towards the end of time there would be so much destruction. It would be best to be like the two sons of Adam who just said, you know, if you're going to raise your hand to kill me, I'm not raising my hand to kill you. I fear Allah, the Lord of the worlds. If killing is pointless, indiscriminate, there's nothing in it that can be justified. It just becomes indiscriminate killing. You cannot justify that. And so morally, there's just no justification. You cannot philosophically justify that type of warfare. You can't indiscriminately kill people. It's as simple as that. Only combatants in a just war are legitimate targets. That's it. The next section he goes on is the Sharia, which is the sacred law. And I want to say just about that. When people think of the Sharia, you have to be very careful because there is no concept whatsoever in Islam of a theocracy. This is one of the modern myths that have been perpetrated by modernist type of Muslims, this idea that Islam is a theocracy. And if you look up theocracy in the dictionary, it says the rule of God or those who stand in place of God. Isn't it interesting that the word for Abu Bakr, when he was called the Khalifa, he was called Khalifatu Rasulillah. He was not called Khalifatullah. He was called the Khalifa of the Messenger of God, not of God. Because the only one who can truly rule with God's judgment is a prophet of God. No one else. And if prophets aren't walking the earth, then nobody has that authority to say this is the rule of God. It's as simple as that. And so what the Muslim Sharia is, in essence, understanding any circumstance you find yourself in. It's a grid. It's a working grid to understand circumstances. And each circumstance will have a ruling, one of five rulings. An obligation or a requirement, which is called wajib, you have to do it, paying charity. Something that's recommended, highly encouraged to do. Paying zakat is wajib. Sadaqa is mandub, to give. If somebody's in need, even though you've paid your 2.5% of zakat, if you see somebody in need, it's encouraged. You don't have to do it, but it's highly encouraged to do it. And then the permissible, which is the majority of things in this world are simply permissible. To go out and sit on a bench in a park and read a book. Mubah. Nobody can tell you have to do it. Nobody can tell you can't do it. It's just a permitted act. The majority of acts in the world are permitted. And then you have disliked actions. Talking too much without benefit is disliked.